Usually when you walk into like a grand world-renowned museum, there's this established contract between you and the institution.
Right, yeah, set of expectations.
Exactly. You expect to walk into a gallery, find a massive ornate, gilded frame on the wall, and inside that frame, you expect to see a
A
masterpiece.
sprawling landscape or a hyper detailed portrait or something.
Yeah, exactly. Something that took hundreds of hours to render. So you step closer, anticipating this dense visual information. But imagine stepping up to that massive frame, and inside there is just, well, a smaller version of the exact same
Oh,
frame.
wow. Yeah.
And inside that, nothing, just the wall.
I mean, it completely subverts the expectation, right? We are
Yes.
so conditioned to, look through the frame to find the substance.
Right.
So when the frame itself becomes the substance, we feel this sudden jolt of disorientation.
It's totally jarring.
It really is. It
Yeah.
forces a complete recalibration of what you are supposed to be looking at. You are suddenly staring at your own anticipation.
Which is a remarkably uncomfortable feeling. But that exact feeling of walking up to the ornate frame and finding only the frame inside it, that is the very bizarre landscape we are navigating today in this deep dive.
It really is a unique one today.
Yeah, we are tackling what has to be the most uniquely minimalist and honestly kind of hilarious source material you, the listener, have ever sent our way.
Oh, excellent.
Because we're talking about 10 words.
10 words, a colon, and some quotation marks. It is an extreme exercise in brevity.
To say the least.
Or, I mean, more likely, a spectacular copy-paste error that we are just going to treat as a profound Rorschach test.
I am choosing to believe it is a deliberate provocation.
Natural.
Because, the entirety of the source text provided to us today consists of a single heading followed immediately by its own repetition.
Right, the whole
We'll
file.
just read it. It reads, quote, excerpts from The Power of Value Investing, followed by a colon, and then The Power of Value
It's
Investing.
a structural paradox. We are dealing with an extreme distillation here.
Totally.
We don't have the usual, 50 pages of data, historical case studies, or executive summaries. We are looking at the absolute foundational DNA of a concept before it even begins to explain itself.
Right, before the text even gets off the ground.
Exactly. We have to look at what the text is doing before the text actually arrives.
It's like the throat clearing before the speech, except the speaker clears their throat and then just walks right off the stage.
Yeah, drops the mic and leaves before saying a word.
Exactly. And normally our mission in these deep dives is to synthesize mountains of research, pull out the hidden threads, and give you the synthesized takeaway.
But today the mission is completely inverted.
Completely. Because we have almost zero information, we have to put these specific isolated words under a massive electron microscope.
We really do.
We have to analyze the weight of the linguistic choices here and explore this weird paradox of a source that promises excerpts but delivers absolutely nothing but its own name.
I mean, stripping away the arguments and the data points leaves you with the raw mechanics of framing. We're basically looking at cognitive architecture today.
Okay, so I want to look at the physical structure of the text itself before we even touch words like value or investing.
Sure, let's start with the structure.
Because there is a transition happening here from the promise of the document to the reality of the document. The first line makes a very explicit announcement. It says, excerpts from The Power of Value Investing.
Right, and it specifically uses the word excerpts, plural.
Yes. Plural. It sets a really heavy expectation. And then there is that colon. To me, the colon is like the most manipulative piece of punctuation in the English
The
language.
most manipulative. How so?
Well, it is a grammatical drumroll. It builds all this tension.
It does. I mean, a colon is essentially a structural hinge.
Right.
It operates as a strict promise that whatever comes after it is going to, clarify, expand upon, or deliver on the premise established before it.
It's like an arrow pointing forward.
Exactly. It literally signals the brain to release a tiny hit of dopamine in anticipation of a resolution.
Oh, wow, really? Dopamine.
Yeah, because when you read excerpts from, followed by a colon, your cognitive state shifts into a highly receptive mode. Your brain is actively preparing to receive a curated list of highlights, like a distillation of a larger work.
You are bracing for the synthesis.
Right.
You are sitting there with your metaphorical pen hovering over the paper, ready for the bullet points. You're ready for the wisdom.
And then the text immediately following this colon, the grand reveal, is just the title again.
Just the title, The Power of Value Investing.
It creates this bizarre self-referential loop. By promising an excerpt and then only delivering the title, the text acts as a tautology.
A equals A.
Right. The summary of the thing is just the name of the thing.
It's like opening a door labeled hallway, only to find yourself immediately back out on the street looking at the door.
That's a great way to put it. It creates an information vacuum.
What do you mean by an information vacuum?
Well, in information theory, a message only has value if it reduces uncertainty.
Yeah.
If I tell you it's raining outside, that reduces your uncertainty about the weather.
Okay, that makes sense.
But if I say the weather is the weather, I have transmitted zero bits of information. I haven't told you anything new.
Right, you've just repeated yourself.
Exactly. So by promising a reduction of uncertainty, the excerpts, and then providing a tautology, the text actually increases cognitive dissonance.
It really does.
It suggests this ultimate, almost impenetrable density. It implies, perhaps accidentally, that the title is so perfectly chosen, so absolute in its meaning, that there is no way to excerpt it without losing the essence.
Oh, I love that interpretation. Like, the only way to summarize the power of value investing is just to say the power of value investing.
Right. It refuses to be broken down.
It's like a linguistic black hole where no information can escape its own gravity. But I have to wonder about the psychological effect this has on us, the reader.
It's definitely profound.
When we are handed something this minimal, this totally self-contained, are we just projecting?
Projecting our own ideas, you mean?
Yeah. Does this minimalist, almost blank page approach force the reader to project their own preconceived notions onto the text rather than relying on the author to provide the information?
So that's a really valid question.
Like, are we just basically reading our own minds here because there's nothing else to read?
Well, nature abhors a vacuum, right? Mm-hmm. And human cognition absolutely despises it.
We hate not knowing things.
We do. Our brains are relentlessly aggressive predictive processing engines. We are constantly trying to recognize patterns and fill in missing data.
Even when the data isn't there.
Especially when it isn't there. So when a text promises to give you information and then dramatically withholds it, your brain doesn't just stop. It works overtime to resolve the tension of that colon.
Because it wants that dopamine hit of resolution.
Exactly. Because the author hasn't provided the guardrails of an actual argument, the listener is forced to bring every assumption they have about power, value, and investing to the table just to make the sentence resolve in their own head.
So you end up essentially writing the excerpts in your own head.
You do.
If the text won't tell you what the power of value investing is, your brain starts trying to figure it out on its own.
It's almost like a Zen koan.
Oh, like the sound of one hand clapping.
Exactly. The sound of one hand clapping, or the excerpts of a title that is just a title. It's a paradox designed to make you think.
The text becomes an active participant in your thought process entirely through omission.
The repetition acts as a mirror that bounces your own inquiry right back at you. It demands that you sit with the title itself.
It forces you to reevaluate the only data you actually have.
Which is just those few words.
Right. So if the answer is trapped in the title, then we really need to take that seriously and stop looking for the missing excerpts.
We have to work with what we've got.
Exactly. Yeah. We only have these six words. Let's break down the semantic weight of these specific words grouped together.
Do it.
The literal phrase is the power of value investing. Let's start with the first word, the.
Definite article.
Right. It doesn't say a power of value investing. It says the.
And that's a crucial distinction. It establishes immediate singularity.
Meaning there's only one.
Exactly. It implies that what is being discussed is not one option among many, not a subjective interpretation, but the ultimate definitive reality of the subject.
It claims an absolute authority right out of the gate.
Right. It's very confident.
Which is a very bold stance in the world of finance, where literally everything is probabilistic. Nothing is ever 100% certain.
True. Finance is all about odds and probabilities.
Right. But the juxtaposition of the word power with the phrase value investing is what really catches my eye here. Well, usually when we talk about investing, we use words that imply methodology or human action. We talk about the strategy of value investing or the principles, the process, the framework.
Right. Words that sound like a textbook or a manual.
Exactly. But this text chooses the word power.
And power carries immense semantic gravity.
It really does.
It suggests force, dominance, a profound capability that exists independently of the user.
Like it's bigger than the person doing the investing?
Exactly. When you frame a financial concept with the word power, you elevate it from a mere strategy. You frame value investing not just as a set of rules you follow, but as an entity possessing intrinsic strength.
You transform a verb investing into an unstoppable force.
That's a great way to put it. You give it agency.
You know, when I hear the word power placed right next to investing, my brain immediately goes to math.
Oh, interesting. Like exponents.
Yes. I don't think of political power or physical strength. I think of an exponential power. Because if you look at the core mechanics of what investing actually is over a long time horizon, it's compounding.
Compound interest, the eighth wonder of the world, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Could power here be a literal reference to the mathematical engine of compound interest rather than just a synonym for effectiveness?
I think taking that a step further, the mathematical concept of an exponent, a power, is really the only way to truly understand capital allocation over time.
Because it's not a straight line.
Right. In mathematics, raising something to a power represents repeated recursive multiplication. The output of the last cycle becomes the input of the next.
It feeds on itself.
Yes. If you were taking the concept of value and applying investing to it over decades, you are inherently dealing with exponential growth. And the thing is, the human brain is notoriously terrible at intuitively grasping exponential function.
Oh, absolutely terrible at it.
We think linearly. We expect 1, 2, 3, 4. We don't intuitively grasp 1, 2, 4, 8, 16.
Right. We just don't scale that way mentally. It's like the old thought experiment about folding a piece of paper.
The one where it reaches the moon.
Yeah. If you fold a standard piece of paper 42 times, it reaches the moon. Our brains just reject that as completely impossible because we are linear creatures.
It just sounds wrong, even though the math is perfectly sound.
So, by using the word power, the text might be operating on two distinct semantic levels simultaneously.
I think so. On the surface, it implies influence and reliability. Like,
yeah,
this strategy is powerful.
Right.
But structurally, it points directly to the mathematical engine that drives the entire discipline. It implies that value investing isn't just a linear accumulation of wealth. It is a geometric progression.
That dramatically shifts how you read the sentence. The power of value investing isn't just saying value investing is a really good strategy.
You know, it's saying something much deeper.
It's saying the exponential force generated by the discipline of value investing. It's describing an autonomous engine that you set in motion.
And the fuel for that engine is the word value.
Value.
Yeah, this is arguably the most heavily loaded word in the entire sequence. Value functions here as an adjective modifying investing, but it stands alone as a highly contested philosophical concept.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, how do we even define worth?
Especially in markets, because value isn't just a static number printed on a balance sheet.
Right. It's constantly shifting based on perspective.
And anyone who follows this space knows that value is wildly divergent from price. You can have a stock trading at $50 that is intrinsically worth $10 or intrinsically worth $100.
The price is just what someone is willing to pay today.
Exactly. The price is just the current consensus of the crowd's mood. It's totally emotional a lot of the time.
So when you combine value with investing, the act of allocating resources with an expectation of a future return, you create this fascinating tension between perception and reality.
A tension between what the crowd thinks and what is actually true.
Exactly. Value investing is fundamentally an act of chronological arbitrage.
Chronological arbitrage. That's a great phrase.
Thanks. You are looking at a localized point in the present moment, acknowledging the market's current perceived price, and asserting that the intrinsic underlying reality is different.
You are betting that the truth will eventually overwhelm the perception.
Yes. You're betting on the future recognizing the truth of the present.
So you are actively hunting for the hallucination. You are saying the entire market is looking at this asset and hallucinating its worth, and I'm the one seeing reality.
Which takes a lot of confidence.
It requires an absurd amount of psychological fortitude, because the market can stay irrational for years.
Far longer than you can stay solvent, as the saying goes.
Right. You might buy something for half of its intrinsic value, and the market might decide to price it at a quarter of its value the next day.
Which brings us right back to the word power.
Oh, how so?
The power comes from the inevitable, eventual correction of that gap between price and value.
Like a rubber band snapping back?
Exactly. The fundamental assertion embedded in this philosophy is that reality will ultimately assert itself. True value possesses a gravitational pull that will eventually correct the market's false perceptions.
It suggests a deep belief in an ultimate reversion to truth.
Yes, the power is basically gravity. It pulls everything back to reality eventually.
So when we piece all of this back together, The power of value investing.
Let's review the pieces.
We have the definite, uncompromising authority of the word the.
Right.
We have the physics and exponential mathematical compounding of the word power.
The geometric progression.
We have the contrarian search for intrinsic truth in the word value.
Separating reality from hallucination.
And we have the future-oriented, delayed gratification of investing.
All of that philosophical weight is packed into a tiny, repeating loop of text.
It's honestly kind of amazing when you look at it that way.
The text, despite its absurd brevity, carries a massive structural load. By refusing to give us the excerpts, it forces us to reckon with the premise itself.
It's almost hostile in a way, like it's challenging the reader.
It insists that before you can even begin to understand the nuances of the strategy, you know, the discounted cash flow models, the margin of safety, the analysis of moats, you must fundamentally accept the gravity of the words first.
You have to understand you are dealing with a force of nature, not a quick stock tip.
Exactly. It's a paradigm, not a tactic.
It's as if the text is saying, I am not going to give you the cheat codes or the bullet points. I am giving you the name of the game, and you have to sit with it until you understand the sheer scale of the game.
And by giving us a blank page, it demands our absolute analytical attention.
We literally have nothing else to look at.
It highlights how aggressively we are wired to extract meaning from things. When presented with a structure that implies depth, like a title followed by a colon, our minds will provide the depth if the text refuses to.
We just can't help ourselves.
The architecture creates the expectation, and we fill the void.
It brings us right back to staring at that empty museum frame.
It really does.
Because the frame is gilded, because it's in an institution of authority, we start analyzing the wall behind it. We start analyzing our own reflection in the glass.
The framing itself dictates the importance of the emptiness.
Exactly. If this exact same non-existent text had been titled, I don't know, Tips for Buying Cheap Stocks, our brains would be in a completely different, much shallower cognitive space.
Oh, absolutely. We would be expecting a listicle.
We'd be looking for a coupon clipping strategy. Top 10 stocks to buy right now or whatever.
Right. It would feel transactional, not philosophical.
But because it's elevated to the power of value investing, we end up discussing exponential mathematics, the philosophy of truth versus perception, and the gravity of markets.
That is the immense, invisible weight of a title.
It's wild to think about.
Every single syllable in that isolated phrase has to carry its own weight because there is no supporting scaffolding. There are no paragraphs to clarify the author's intent.
No context clues.
None. The words stand entirely on their own, echoing in that self-referential loop we talked about.
It really makes you realize how heavily we weigh the packaging of information before we consume the information itself.
We judge the book by its cover, literally.
But even more than that, we construct the whole universe of the book based on the cover. We've taken the most minimal text imaginable, a title, a broken promise of excerpts and a repetition, and we've seen how intensely it forces the brain to work.
The title is the seed.
Yeah.
When the text itself is withheld, the seed is all we have to examine.
And we've definitely examined every angle of that seed today, which leaves me with a final provocative thought for you, the listener, to explore on your own.
Something for them to mull over.
Exactly. We've spent this time projecting our own understanding onto this void. Let's take that to its absolute logical extreme.
Okay, I'm listening.
If you had to reconstruct an entire worldview, a strict operational set of rules for your life based exclusively on the isolated phrase, the power of value investing, without ever reading the missing excerpts, without ever consulting another text, what inherent assumptions would you make about the fundamental relationship between worth and action?
That is a deep question.
Think about that empty frame inside the empty frame. What picture do you ultimately end up painting inside it?